Camaro through valleys deep, in search of higher ground on mountains steep. And though with feet unsure, I still keep pressing on, for I am guided by the faithful one.
Those who know only the movie versions of The Lord of the Rings may not realize the true significance of J.R.R. Tolkien's work. His Middle-earth serves as the venue for a deep investigation into our humanness, what it means, and what we would like it to mean. We would like to see ourselves as high and noble, like the elves or the men of Gondor, but the standards Tolkien sets may be beyond our reach. Consider the stewards of Gondor, for example. For 500 years, from the time the last king died without an heir, the stewards ruled the kingdom in the name of the king, but never took the throne for themselves. Boromir, the oldest son of the steward Denethor, apparently couldn't understand that, which is why he asked his father, how many hundreds of years needs it to make a steward a king, if the king returns not? To this, his father replied, few years maybe in other places of less royalty. In Gondor, 10,000 years would not suffice. Tolkien's characterization of Gondor's stewards envisions a degree of selfless honor that transcends generations. But is that reasonable? It is remarkable for one person to lay aside personal interests to guard a place of power, wealth, and prestige for someone else. But how could such selflessness be passed down from one generation to the next, knowing that the supreme authority would eventually be handed over to someone else? Yet that is exactly what our God expects his people to do. Consider Eliezer of Damascus, the steward of Abraham's household. He was in line to inherit Abraham's wealth, had his master died without an heir. But God had promised an heir, and thus Isaac, the son of promise, was born. He, not his half-brother Ishmael, would inherit Abraham's wealth and property, and the covenant promise and blessing God bestowed on the family line. Abraham had the responsibility of guarding that inheritance and passing it on to the next generation, and to do that, he required help. First, he had to make sure Isaac had an heir, and that meant finding a wife for his son. Not just any wife would do. God had already explained that he would judge the people of Canaan, so Abraham couldn't have his son marry the women of the land, lest his inheritance be dissipated and lost. He had to find a bride for Isaac from his own kin, and thus he turned to his faithful steward Eliezer for help. Now Abraham was old, advanced in years, and Adonai blessed Abraham in everything. Then Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, who managed everything that belonged to him, now put your hand under my thigh so that I may make you take an oath by Adonai, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from among the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I am dwelling. On the contrary, to my land and to my relatives you must go and get a wife for my son Isaac. But the servant said to him, suppose the woman were unwilling to follow after me to this land. Should I then have your son go back to the land you came from? Abraham said to him, see to it that you don't return my son there. Adonai, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from my native land, and who spoke to me and made a pledge to me, saying, to your seed I will give this land, he will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife for my son from there. If the woman is not willing to follow after you, then you will be free from this oath of mine. Nevertheless, you must not return my son there. So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and he made a pledge to him concerning this matter. Abraham's trust in Eliezer testifies to the strength of the man's character. His only motivation was to ensure the continuity of his master's legacy. He could have made a name and a house for himself, but instead he expended every effort to find Rebekah, the perfect wife for his master's son. Eliezer pinned his identity on Abraham, and therefore his future could be secure only by making sure the house of Abraham continued. As long as Abraham's house remained, Eliezer and his descendants would have a place to live and serve and enjoy the blessings as trusted servants of the family and nation God himself had chosen to bless the entire earth. That wasn't the end of Abraham's responsibility toward securing Isaac's inheritance. He had other sons by the wives he took after the death of Isaac's mother Sarah. Those sons, like Ishmael, could threaten Isaac's inheritance, but they were still sons of Abraham. That's why he honored them with gifts to establish houses of their own and sent them away so they could prosper and not be in competition with Isaac over the land of promise. Abraham's wisdom became apparent in the fact that there was no dynastic struggle after his death, such as happened after King David's death. David's son Solomon had to contend with his brother Adonijah for the throne his father had bequeathed to him. But Isaac made peace with his brother Ishmael, and together they buried their father next to his beloved Sarah. It seems that Ishmael, like Eliezer, understood this eternal truth: "For a day in your courts is better than a thousand anywhere else. I would rather stand at the threshold of the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness." That understanding comes from a place of trust and security, a place that's hard to find because we're conditioned to trust only ourselves. The way of the world dictates this condition. Those who follow this way grasp for everything they deem is rightfully theirs, whether it's been bestowed on them or not. In climbing this ladder of self-imposed honor, they wound others and bring them down, and in the process, destroy the very things they and their rivals prize so highly. Is this not what the enemy of our souls has done? Yet pride and covetousness spur him on to continued rebellious independence. That, at least, is the observation John Milton makes in Paradise Lost when he writes of Satan, "To reign is worth ambition, though in hell. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven." Satan sought to reign in heaven, just as Adonijah sought to reign in Israel, but neither had that right. Grasping for the highest place, they lost everything. Eliezer grasped for nothing, but served faithfully in his assigned position, and thereby secured a place of tremendous honor in his master's house. Yeshua taught us how that works. One who is faithful in the smallest matters is also faithful in much, and the one unjust in the smallest matters will likewise be unjust in much. So then, if you cannot be trusted with unjust wealth, who will trust you with true wealth? Now, if you have not been trustworthy with what belongs to another, who will give you anything of your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will stick by one and look down on the other. You cannot serve God and money. Faithful in little, Eliezer was entrusted with much. Even the fate of the covenant of redemption passed from his master to the rightful heir. That is the kind of selfless, honorable nobility demonstrated by those who rest securely in their master's house.